It's not playing with Lex and Dan.
It is indeed not playing. The song wouldn't lie to you. I'm Lex.
I'm Dan.
And this, of course, is the podcast where we watch movies that most of the world has seen, but that one or both of us has missed. And this season, I am especially lucky, one, because I get to be with my friend Dan again, and with you, the dear listener, again, but two, because I get to watch a whole bunch of movies about America's pastime, baseball.
Could you infuse that with a little less... that's not sarcasm. Passive aggressive. I don't know what it was.
As I got there, I was like, is it still America's pastime? Like, has that changed?
Because,
like,
we got something else now? It's pickleball now?
America's most popular professional sport is football. But
yes,
we still say that
true.
Baseball is America's pastime. When's the last time you passed time playing baseball? Just say.
That's a fair question. I don't know. But I was going through a list of other sports in my head. You said, I believe football is America's most popular sport. I would say basketball, America's most popular and interesting sport in the last 2 minutes. Mm-hmm. Hockey, America's iciest sport.
I think hockey gets the reputation of being the most fun to watch live. I've done it. It was fine.
I used to go to our college hockey games when I was in school, and they were a lot of fun to watch. But then I left, and I honestly don't care anymore. Anyway,
like soccer
baseball.
In person too. But yeah, baseball, here we go.
All right. Well, we have watched a variety of baseball movies, from comedies to historical dramas. This week, I think we're mixing it up a little bit more. Now, Lex, you have some sort of history with this week's title.
We are watching Major League. I have seen Major League 2. Here's how I saw Major League 2. Growing up in Wyomissing, Pennsylvania, home of Lex Friedman and Taylor Swift, I would go to bed with the clock radio by my bedside on snooze, and I would listen to Y102, 102.5 WRFY-FM for 29 minutes before I went to sleep. And they were doing a contest, like, hey, the 10th caller is going to win tickets to Major League 2. And when they started playing the very beginning of the promo, I was like, I know what that promo is. That's the call-in. So I jump out of bed, and I race to my phone, and I call the radio station, and I was calling number 10, and I won the two tickets. And I didn't even go tell my parents, because it was past my bedtime. So I just, like, was excited. Like, I couldn't have been more excited if I had, you know, won $10,000. I just couldn't believe that I had won the radio contest. And I leapt back into bed. I had a bunk bed. I slept on the lower bunk at that time. And when I leapt back into bed, I did it with too much enthusiasm and scraped a huge chunk of my back off jumping back into the bed from the top bunk. And so I always associate Major League 2, not that I think about it all that often, but with that back scratch, cut, injury, whatever. I did see that movie in the theater. I also got a free popcorn. It was incredible.
That's pretty great.
And I think a souvenir hat that I don't have an idea what happened to. It's gone. But all I remember, I feel like I'm thinking of it as, like, true slapstick comedy, probably because I also associate Charlie Sheen with, like, Hot Shots. But I remember it as, like, stupid comedy, which I don't say as a pejorative. I don't really remember the story of that one, nor do I know what the story is of this first one. But I know that Charlie Sheen is in it, and I know that it is, I believe, a ridiculous comedy.
Yeah, so I have seen this movie. It was a very long time ago, so long ago that I really don't remember any of it. I think I only saw it once. My recollection of this was that there was, like, one joke in particular that did make me really laugh out loud, but otherwise, yes, it falls into that stupid comedy bin, and that was not. It's not always to my taste. That can be real, appropriately enough for a baseball season, hit or miss for me. So there's other people in here, and I've forgotten again who else is in this movie, but, like, there's definitely other names in this movie. But yeah, it is that sort of brand of 80s comedy.
Call sheet yet, but I was thinking, like, I don't, is like Kevin Bacon in this movie? Like, I don't know. I feel like there could be big names of people who you wouldn't expect in a comedy in this movie. That's
I do remember one of the characters. I think it might be Charlie Sheen's character is called Wild Thing, and the song plays a part. Yeah, I can tell you, I think it's the Cleveland Indians, who are no longer the Cleveland Indians as of this recording. I believe that's the team they're playing on. And I don't remember the premise of how we end up with this, essentially a ragtag team of misfits. But, you know, it's that kind of movie.
I didn't even know that Cleveland changed the name. But yeah, you're right. They're now
the Guardians.
Yeah. I had to Google it. Didn't know.
Good for them. Anyway, so yeah, 89, is that right?
I haven't looked, so I don't know.
I think it's 1980. It's 88 or 89. So... very much an 80s comedy. I think there's probably some stuff in here that hasn't aged terribly well.
We're shocked to know this.
Just blown away.
Yeah, it is indeed 1989, and it's rated R. We don't do a ton of R-rated movies.
Yeah, we don't do R-rated movies.
I don't know if that's going to mean naked ladies or profanity or both, but we'll find out.
Probably those. Probably not a lot of excessive violence.
I'm going to guess zero male full frontal nudity. That's my prediction.
I think you would be correct.
For this male-centric comedy starring a bunch of dudes. That's my
guess. In 1989, yes. Yeah. All right. Well, we're going to cue this thing up, but the only thing that can make it better is if we had ourselves an audience in the stand cheering us on, which we can't because it's a podcast, so that would be really boring. But the good news is if you're a member of The Incomparable, you can listen as Lex and I watch this movie. And you can sync it up with the film itself. Enjoy all our commentary, our hard-hitting commentary, timed appropriately to the movie.
And I want to be clear, that sounds like it could be annoying, but we watch the movie. Like, we don't know, I don't know the movie, so we watch it. Our comments are lighthearted and delightful, but they do not detract from your movie enjoyment experience.
Exactly. We ride that line. We're perfectly threading that needle there for you.
Some people tell us they listen without even watching the movie. They just listen to us commentating on it. I think those people are crazy, but thank you.
Yeah, I mean, I think they're better than the people who line it up with some other movie. Those people are truly strange.
Yeah, it does well with Dark Side of the Moon.
So if you want to become a member of The Incomparable and get access to all of our member commentaries, as well as a ton of other great features, including bootleg episodes that are released before they're edited, extra bonus content, access to The Incomparable member Discord, and maybe some nice swag, you can go to theincomparable.com/members, sign up for your membership plans of choice, and you can choose which shows you allocate your funds to. So if you're a fan of Not Playing with Lex and Dan, you can give us a little bit of your hard-earned money, and we appreciate it because we do this for fun, but it's a nice little sideline for us, and you know, we don't do ads. It's just for you.
Because we love you. Well, Dan,
we have watched Major League, Lex.
We have. And here's my short take.
Yes.
This is not a good movie. And for a comedy, what it mostly lacked was comedy, with the one exception being an actor I didn't know, but whom you did. I thought Bob Uecker was really funny as the broadcaster, Harry Doyle.
He is the MVP. He's an actual broadcaster, right? I mean, I think that's part of why he works so well, is that he sounds like, I mean, listening to him sounds like listening to a baseball game. And he's got just the right,
the show for sure.
Yeah, he's got the right comedy chops to do it. And his seriousness and realisticness contrast nicely when he does the things that you're not supposed to do as an announcer, right? Like, that's good.
I am really surprised by how not funny it was. And I honestly, I'm not even trying to be mean, and like, I'm even trying to give it, you know, 1989 eyes. This movie was a hit.
Yeah.
I am unclear on why, because it just didn't strike me as that's a better joke than was in the movie most of the time. But it didn't strike me as that funny. Do you disagree? Like, I thought it was really lacking in comedy.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of the things that are intended to be comedic in this movie are things that are in the didn't age well camp. They were cheap and lazy jokes that were racist or otherwise mean and just not good jokes. I think they leaned on tropes and stereotypes and things like that rather than on, say, well-written funny dialogue. The only thing that I remember laughing about really hard when I saw this when I was younger was the scene where Wesley Snipes gets to slide into the base and he's like 6 inches short from the base.
Yes.
Like, that's a funny bit of physical comedy.
Yeah, that is funny. That is funny. And like, there are some good performers in this
movie.
Like, I thought that Wesley Snipes did a nice job.
Yeah.
I thought that Dennis Haysbert does a nice job with a terribly written character.
Jesus.
We can go deeper on that.
Yeah, we'll talk.
If you saw the movie. But Charlie Sheen, I'm not a fan of Charlie Sheen the human. Charlie Sheen, the 80s and 90s comic actor, was really funny. Not here. Like, I don't know if he was underwritten or if he just wasn't doing a good job or what, but like, I think that the idea was it's supposed to be funny because he's bad at baseball. It's supposed to be funny because he looks funny in those original glasses they gave him and because he's like bad haircut and, you know, guy from jail. But he had very few, you know, jokes.
Yeah, he doesn't really have any jokes. This movie can't quite decide if it's the scrappy underdog movie or the slapstick sports comedy movie. I think it tries to have its cake and eat it too a little bit. And that's one of the problems. I think this, my thought about this movie was it's kind of got good bones as a plot structure. It feels very tried and true, right? It's the, you've got the sort of mustache twirling, as it were, villain who is like, I'm going to make my team lose and then we're going to be able to move somewhere else, right? So you got your stakes established. You got the team of misfits. They come together. They win, right? Like the overall structure, dramatic structure of the movie is perfectly fine. I think most of where this movie falls down are, I agree with you, there's not a lot of jokes. We have the really terribly conceived love story that's threaded throughout, which, as you and I discussed while watching, is just incredibly creepy.
Yeah.
You know, he basically stalks this woman that he used to be with, and for some reason that we really don't understand, she comes around, because isn't it adorable when somebody follows you home to your apartment and won't take no for answer?
That love story is terrible in a lot of ways. One, it's based on stalking. Two, it's based on everybody cheating.
Yep. And plus, Rene Russo's character is kind of non-existent.
Right.
She has no motivation for coming around at the end. She is gone for like the last half an hour of the movie, basically.
She exists to be a recipient of his love and affection, and to, you know, break up with the fiance who seemingly did nothing wrong. Like, he's rude to the baseball player, but should be.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yes, he's the archetype of the 80s. There's that culture war, I think, in the 80s, where you have sort of the old school blue collar macho man versus the young guy who's probably in business or a lawyer and he's got the nice suit or whatever. Like, I feel like that character shows up in so many 80s movies. And it's, there's this cultural thing about repudiating the sort of, oh, you know, they're driving, you know, terrible sports cars and wearing suits and on their cell phones and making deals. I don't think some of the diehard characters like are like that too. But yeah, he's not, it's super shorthand, right? You're supposed to know that just from that character's appearance, but no way he portrays himself is he actually bearing that out, really.
Yeah. She learns nothing new about him. And like the thing that is in theory driving her that we see is that he has finally read Moby Dick.
Right, but he cheats.
And we know he didn't read Moby Dick.
Yeah.
And that he was good at having sex with her, according to her. This is not me projecting. This is how she described it. She said they were always good at that. And then she's like, okay, well, he wins baseball games now, so I want to be with him again. Terrible.
If this was made today, he would have just read the Wikipedia summary to Moby Dick.
Yeah. I guess Cliff Notes is a thing, don't exist. I was just thinking about that. Like, I never see Cliff Notes anymore. Like, today, 2024, I don't think that's a thing
Why
anymore.
Would you have that? Yeah.
Yeah. You would just ask Catchy your Petitia. Local generative AI to tell you about the book, and it might make up whole subplots. I love Rene Russo. I think that she's
great.
So good in so many things.
Yeah.
And I think she did fine with this role. This role is just hot garbage. And then, like, I'll forgive the storyline itself. Like, they lay out the exposition pretty early. Hi, I'm the mean inheritor, and I want to make this team as bad as possible so that I can move it. I was reading on Wikipedia, of all places,
I saw
that the original ending, it turned out it was all a ruse. Like, there was another scene where she's like, I only did it to motivate the team. Mwahaha. But first of all, that's terrible.
Yeah, it makes no sense.
It was all
sense.
A dream. Does not work. And audiences didn't like it, so they cut it, which I think is the better choice. I don't mind that framing. That's fine. It's a little tropey, but fine. But she's honestly not evil enough in some ways. I did like the runner of her making things worse and worse for the team.
Yeah.
And I thought that there was potential there that didn't quite get paid off. Like, hey, the equipment sucks and they have a horrible plane. And now that, like, the horrible plane looked like it was in danger of killing them all, which wasn't going to be in support of her goal. And it felt like they should have escalated to that, right? Like, the news should have been, hey, first we're on this crappy bus, and now because you're doing well, I'll get you this plane. And then they see it's a crappy plane. To me, that's the funnier.
That's fair. I agree with you on that. No, I think you're right. Like, again, it's I think shows the tension of this movie not being able to decide if it's the scrappy sports team movie or the, you want it in some ways, you want to push it further, like like an Airplane style comedy, right, where it's wacky and the jokes are frequent and absurd and over the top, right, whereas this movie never quite goes over the top far enough that it like verges into like pure comedy. It still wants to have that thread of the sports team and they are scrappy underdogs and they're going to win it all by coming together, and that's, I think, potentially too much quote-unquote drama for this movie. It doesn't really earn it.
Yeah. So do we want to talk a little bit more about Dennis Haysbert?
Yeah, I was disappointed to see, like, apparently up until he did 24, this was the role Dennis Haysbert was known for. And I was just so depressed by reading that. Because
now I'd say he's probably most known for
Allstate. Yeah. I mean, Dennis Haysbert is just a fantastic actor. He is great. That man has so much gravitas, and he's, I think, just excellent.
Nothing but respect from one guy with a voice that people say nice things about, me, to another. That guy's voice,
the voice
is
of God, man.
Insane. Yeah.
Yeah. I think, I mean, that part is extremely racist, very stereotypical, and I felt bad for him. Like, I get it. As I said during the film of the movie, is, you know what? You know, it's a job. You got to take a job, especially in this day and age, like in the 1980s. Right. I think you were not in a position to be able to turn down a role, even if you thought it was extremely racist.
And at the time, like, I mean, I think that most audiences wouldn't have thought about the racist.
Oh, no, not at all. No, I think that that was part of the comedy, quote unquote.
Yeah, for sure. And I will say, like, we talked about it very briefly while we were watching, and the movie definitely does not hang a hat on this, but the heavily Christian player who wants Dennis Haysbert's character to be all about Jesus, he's shown to be a lousy guy.
Right, he doesn't exactly come out looking good
There's something subversive about that to me. And they could, I mean, they didn't lean on, like I said, and maybe it wasn't even a big plot point for them, but he's the one who steals the rum, and he gets punished for it by fate or some religious leader
again,
or whatever,
played as a joke, but something they like, they almost got it right.
yeah and like I kind of like that part.
I mean, the other struggle in this movie overall, as we talked about up front, is the, you know, the Cleveland then Indians, now Guardian, in and of itself just extremely racist as a team. We were talking in those opening shots where they show the mascot, how did anybody ever think this was okay? And it pervades the whole team, right? That's the thing, the whole culture.
Team, the culture, the announcements, all of it. It's like they really leaned on it heavily. And it's screamingly obvious to you and me. I'll say, like, listen, I mean, my parents are old, but like my dad still doesn't understand why the Washington Commanders had to change their name.
Yep.
he just doesn't get it. But it also, like, it makes me appreciate how far we've come and how progress keeps going. It also makes me wonder, what the hell else is a horrible racist thing that we're doing now that I'm taking for granted and not noticing, because that's problematic too.
Yep.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
But it's interesting that in a movie that uses that Dennis Haysbert character as such a racist trope for comedy, that there's this other thing against his backdrop that they don't even realize is bizarrely racist.
Right.
That is a key running plot point. Like, there's something interesting about that.
I agree.
More interesting than the movie itself.
Yeah, I agree. Again, when I said the bones of this movie are good, it's like, I think you could actually make a decent version of this movie today and it would be better. Like, no disrespect to the performers who I think are doing their best here, but I think with the overarching narrative of this is still a fun idea, and with better writing and actually trying to make a point, I think you could do something amusing with this premise. It's just that the execution of it is just riddled with problems.
It also, a scene that I expected but didn't really get, was a version of the A League of Their Own scene, where I understand that A League of Their Own came later, but, you know, in A League of Their Own, the girls are warned that, I mean, they were women, but in the movie they were addressed as girls, that attendance was poor and they had to do things to get it more exciting. And so there's like a little montage where, among other things, Gina Davis catches a fly ball with her hat, and then like more and more exciting stuff happens and they do all kinds of crazy things. And I was like, let's have one of those, like, to get fans more excited. Let's have one of those montages, and it didn't happen. So I was let down by the
I'm sorry.
It's okay.
Instead, they just start playing better.
Yeah, those jerks.
Motivated by an also unfortunate scene where they slowly peel off parts of the clothing of a stand-up of the team owner. Woof.
Right.
Yeah. Boy, oh boy.
Boy, oh boy.
Yeah.
We really only need one of those.
I can leave now.
Yeah. No, certainly it did not hold up. It maybe held up even worse than I would have guessed going into it. Some of it not through direct fault of its own. Had they chosen any other team, almost, well, with a couple exceptions.
Yeah, there's still a couple of ones there.
But I am hyper attuned to my desire for movies to have comedy in them, because, as I've mentioned on this podcast before, friend of the show, nemesis of the show, John Syracuse, has said to me in the past that he has observed that this is a frequent comment of mine, is that I wonder, you know, I wish this thing could have been funny, or I liked this movie was funny, even when it's not a comedy. But this one is billed as a comedy. It is clearly trying to be a comedy, and it doesn't find it.
No.
And it is a premise that was ripe for it. I'm really curious as to why it was such a big hit, because even in the late 80s, early 90s, we liked to laugh at stuff, right?
No, there was no humor in those days. I also question the Tom Berenger in the leading role here, who is...
I don't really know him.
Yeah, I mean, the thing I think about him from is movies I've never seen, which are there's a series of movies where he plays a sniper called, I think, Sniper. And I think those are kind of one of his best known movies. But
he was in the movie Inception, which I've seen, but I don't remember who that character
was. Yeah, he's a very 80s leading man, I guess. I guess he was in Platoon, too. And he was nominated for an Oscar for his role in Platoon. So I think probably he's riding a little bit on that success. But he is not, you know, he's not your typical leading man, I think, or at least he's not the leading man for a comedy, because he's a straight man. And that's maybe part of the problem.
Those who watched along with me know that when I saw his name in the credits, at first I was confused because I thought he was going to be Tom Bergeron.
It's a very different movie.
So, just to clarify, I think it would have been potentially a better movie.
Maybe funnier. Yeah, it's harder to see Tom Bergeron in the stocking role, that's for sure. Yeah, so maybe not our big winner for the season, but...
No.
Yeah, it had a couple elements, but I think mostly, we're going to leave this one in the dust.
Yeah.
It's the best place to leave it.
Is that a baseball metaphor about like a bad pitch?
Sure. I mean, I was going to make the metaphor about how this movie is a little bit like Charlie Sheen's character's pitching, which is it aims for being a comedy, doesn't quite make it.
I did just glance.
Is that a word?
I did just glance at the Major League 2 Wikipedia page. And boy, quite a cast in that one, too. As I had mentioned to you, Omar Epps takes over the role of Willie Mays Hayes in that one. But it also features such actors as Richard Schiff.
Oh, my God.
Jesse Ventura.
Oh, no.
Along with an uncredited Randy Quaid and an uncredited Rene Russo.
Okay. All right. That's something, I guess.
So that's what we're watching next week.
Just kidding. Nope. Shall we find out what we're going to watch?
Drum roll, please.
Brought to you by random.org. They bring the random to us. I think, oh man, I don't like the answer it gave me. I have more movies. Here's the thing. I have more movies on the list than we have time for in this season. So I'm debating.
There's no limit on this time other than us.
What?
We can do whatever you want.
Oh man. Are we going to do it then? Okay.
I'm not trying to pressure you on Mike. You could edit this whole conversation out if you want.
All right. According to random.org, the next movie we are going to watch is Fever Pitch, a movie I haven't seen.
Jimmy Fallon. And Drew Barrymore?
I believe so, yes.
Hey, those are the things I know about it.
Yeah, a movie filmed in my hometown and about my hometown, but I haven't seen it. So
Newton, Massachusetts?
Yes, right there. Well, Lex, I'm glad that you and I could get together and watch this movie, even if it didn't meet. Glamping and meeting. Here's how it's for. It's just a glimpse behind the scene for people, or a glimpse, perhaps. Mm-hmm. We watch these movies live and record this podcast live, which means our recording sessions are often a couple hours. And after a couple hours, we do forget how to talk.
It's true. But you should still upgrade and listen to the commentary.
I'm glad that we were able to watch this together, even if it didn't meet our high standards. And I look forward to our next one. But until next time,
Go on.
Keep watching the thing. I got nothing.
Did you say thang?
Thang? Wild thing?
Oh, I get it.
Yeah. Okay. Lexi made my heart sing.
It did, in retrospect, make my heart sing.
Do you want something? Hear something terrifying?
Yes.
James Gammon, the guy who is the manager here.
Yes.
How old do you think he is in this movie?
Well, now I have a suspicion, but I would say that he looks like he's in his 40s.
Really? You think he's 48?
Okay, that doesn't shock me. How old did you think he looked?
I don't know, 72 or 3.
Okay.
I saw he died at 70, and was like, how old could he have been in this movie? And that was in the 2000s.
Wow.
People did age harder.
The Incomparable Podcast Network. Become a member and support this show today. theincomparable.com/members.